you know, we owe them some recognition for putting that project where it was. But those people put a lot of effort into that.
Haynes Harbor upgrades are complete. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. That story and more just ahead. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game closed goat hunting season in the Tuktoyaktuk Mountain portion of Unit 1D on Thursday at noon. The emergency order was issued because the guideline harvest level was exceeded. The area closed is east of the Haynes Highway and Chilkat River and west of Chilkoot River and Lake of Game Management Unit 1D, which is the hunting area for Upperland Canal communities. Fish and Game uses a guideline harvest objective of 10 points to manage the goat hunt there, and those points were exceeded Wednesday with 5 billies and 3 nannies, totaling 11 points. Several other areas in Unit 1D were already closed, including Tuggago Mountain and areas north of Skagway. The rest of the unit will remain open for mountain goat hunting until further notice from the department. To reach the Fish and Game office for the most up-to-date information, call 465-4359. Haynes Harbor work is complete, as engineers will perform the final inspection on November 1st and sign the project over to the borough.
Yeah, it turned out real nice, and I think that I think everybody involved, and including the contractor and the engineering firm and Bill Thomas getting the money, I think it just turned out to be a great project.
Facilities manager Brad Maynard says this weekend is the official completion date of the five-month project.
That's when the engineer does their final inspection, and basically, the contractor asks for a final inspection on the project. The engineers go through and make a short list of punch list items, like let's say, this is crooked, or there's a nail sticking out, or there's this item that you need to do before your final payment. But what it does, it gives them substantial completion, and it gives us the opportunity to take possession of the harbor. And then basically what it does is it starts the one-year warranty period on the harbor, and it also absolves it's an agreement between the borough and the contractor that we consider the project 100% done.
Construction started the last week in May and is complete a month early, says Maynard, and it took a lot of people to make it happen.
You know, everybody from the harbor committee to, the fishermen to Bill Thomas getting the money to P&D doing the engineering to Jan Paulson doing the work to the final inspections, changes we made along the way. I mean, I think in general, a project like that is, to be able to connect all those dots because all the dots are there. And I think that's where the project manager facilitates that. And if you can do it in a, smooth enough fashion, you can keep it within budget and you can get all the work done. You end up with quality work in the end.
And residents also helped by cooperating with borough staff during harbor closures and even sharing some suggestions that made it to the final plan.
Yeah, actually one of them that was pretty significant is we added additional fender piling to the boat grid because we went in and built that new boat grid, right? And all the piling, we put in new grid piling and caps and everything. But the fender pile, which are the pilings that the fishermen tie up to when to hold their boat on the grid, are really in sad shape. And a couple of people said, Bill Thomas was one of them, we should put some of those old piling over there, new fender piles, so we can tie some bigger boats up there. And we ended up making it happen and drove six of them in there. And now, especially the bigger boats in the harbor, they shouldn't have any problem going over there and feeling comfortable tying up to that grid, where I think they were pretty uncomfortable in the previous to that.
Last weekend, the Haynes Fire Department visited the harbor to conduct a fire drill that uses the new water system.
We've upgraded the electrical systems down there. Obviously, there's more power, power capability down there. There's a great water system down there. There's a new fire protection system. If there was a problem on a boat in the harbor, they could respond to a fire down there within 10 or 15 minutes. We've given them the capability of tying the whole dock system into the hydrant, at the top of the dock. Actually, the fire department went down a Monday and actually did a drill on the harbor. And they, unrolled their hoses between the hydrant and where they tie in on the dock. And they've run all the docks. I mean, they've basically gone through that system and understand, number one, the advantages that it has now and the weaknesses in the system. So they have a couple items they want me to do to correct. And the next time they go down there, those things will be corrected. And I think when they're done, they'll be able to they'll be ready to rock and roll if they have an issue down there.
Maynard says a ceremony could be on the way to share the achievement with the rest of the community.
I don't know if anything's in the works, but I think if we really owe, you know, Bill Thomas and the people who worked on the design of that, we really, you know, we owe them some recognition for putting that project where it was. But those people put a lot of effort into that.
Experts revealed Thursday the discovery of vampires in the Northern Lynn Canal in what residents have for years naively called fog.
I will diagnose that. I think you have a flock of vampires.
Nina Hess should know. She's the editor of the Practical Guide to Vampires. Hess says leading research shows that vampires not only take the form of bats, as is commonly known, but they can also make themselves into mist, much like the fog forecasted in the Upper Lynn Canal this Halloween night.
Vampires absolutely love living in Alaska, and I'm sure there's plenty of them up there. They love anywhere that is remote because they don't like to come into contact with too many humans just so that they won't, you know, recognize them and run them out of town. Obviously, they need humans around in order to feed, but they like abandoned lairs.
Like the barracks building in Haines.
They like old cabins in the woods.
Like the ones on the Chilkoot Trail.
They like living underground sometimes.
What is underneath the Fort Seward Lodge and the Red Onion anyway?
They also, of course, everyone knows vampires are active mostly at night, but they can, especially the older vampires, come out during the day as long as there's not too much sunlight. So sort of a overcast, a rainy climate like that you have up there, or even snowy. And a lot of people don't know that vampires can shapeshift into bats, of course, everyone knows that, but they don't know that they can also shapeshift into mist. So if you ever see some of those low-hanging clouds at nighttime, that's probably a vampire.
Even though Southeast Alaska might be the perfect place for vampires to live, Hess says Halloween is an especially active time for the half-dead creatures of the night.
You know, they're active all year round, but I think that especially vampires, they feel more free to walk around during Halloween because it'll be hard to tell the difference between the impersonators and the real vampires. So be sure to put a little clove of garlic in your pocket when you go trick-or-treating. And one real telltale sign is that vampires are actually cold to the touch. So if you've ever met someone who refuses to shake your hand, he or she might be a vampire.
But since temperatures on Halloween night are expected to be around freezing, you might be better off handing out garlic to trick-or-treaters than candy. Or just don't invite them in, says Hess.
Well, there's lots of things you can do. So, you know, everyone knows that garlic scares vampires. Mirrors also scare them away. They actually don't have a reflection, but they're very vain, so they don't like to be reminded of that. So they shy away from mirrors. And the best thing, though, is, and this is something that I always tell kids, you're always safe from a vampire when you're inside your house because vampires have to be invited in. So you would never find a vampire hiding under your bed.
Nina Hess is also the author of A Practical Guide to Monsters, and she tipped off residents of the Northern Lynn Canal Thursday of certain species of monster known to lurk in remote, forested, cold, wet burrows such as ours.
A lot of monsters like remote places because they don't want to be bothered. So, you know, you might have some trolls out there. They love living in foresty areas, under the ground. There's a great map in the book of a troll hole. That was a really fun one to work on. I got to sketch it out.
But there's one monster in particular, called a Remoraz, that could make a snowy Halloween even freakier.
Well, I'm thinking Alaska, and I'm thinking kind of snowy climate. And one monster that loves snowy climates is called the Remoraz. And it's this freaky worm insectoid creature. It actually burrows underground, and then once it senses someone crossing across the frozen field above it, it'll jump out at you and try to bite you.
However, as much as Hess knows about monsters, she claims she's never heard of the legendary northern land otter that takes different forms to kidnap victims to the world in between the sea and the land, the Kushtakaw.
Well, you know, I've never heard of that specifically, but it reminds me of what you would call the lycanthropes or the werewolf family of creatures. There's all different kinds. Everyone's heard of werewolves, which are, of course, people that turn into wolves and sort of half wolf, half people. But there's also all sorts of other animals that can be affected by the were virus, you might call it. So, you know, there's were-rats, there's were-bears, maybe there's a were-otter, too.
And for anyone who feels they're unprepared to identify the monsters around them this Halloween, Practical Guides to Vampires and Monsters might be a good place to start.
Well, The Practical Guide to Vampires, which is a book that I edited, is basically just an illustrated field guide to everything about vampires that you ever wanted to know, everything from the games that young vampires play to the incredible powers that vampires have and why they have them, and very simply just how you can recognize a vampire living among us. And then The Practical Guide to Monsters, which I wrote, is just an overview of all things monsters. It's in the same series as the vampire book, fully illustrated with lots of really fun illustrations. And it's an overview of all things monsters, all different kinds of monsters, everything from the really popular common monsters that you see out on Halloween, like, ghosts and vampires and werewolves, to the mythological monsters that you might have known from Greek mythology or other mythologies, like the Chimera, which is on the cover of the book. And that's the one that has the goat, lion, and dragon head all in one. And then there's some obscure monsters, too, that are actually based on the Dungeons & Dragons game, which is the company that I work for produces that game.
Happy Halloween. Reporting for KHNS, this is Tara Bicknell.